6, please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Welcome, everyone. CAO Smith Haynes, do we have any modifications to the agenda?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, we do. We have one item, B1, which is requested to be added. That's approval of an amendment to a license agreement. TAD has requested that that be heard as a discussion item rather than a consent item. I have also been requested by staff to hear item G1, which is the Klamath discussion prior to the items pulled off of consent.
Okay, very good. Do we have a...
With those changes, Mr. Chairman, I would move the balance of the consent.
Second.
Okay, we got a motion second to adopt the consent calendar, along with the fact that we're going to hear B1 after the Klamath item. So we will be, on the consent agenda, all in support?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. And backing up just a minute, is there any public comment on the consent agenda? Okay. So with that, we are going to move into item G1. Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement and Klamath Hydro Settlement Agreement. So I'll welcome staff here. And just by the way, the reason we're rearranging a little bit is we might have some speakers that need to travel, and so we want to give them an opportunity to speak here in our board and then make some other commitments. So, Hank, the floor is yours.
Good morning, Board. Hank Seaman, Environmental Services Manager for the Public Works Department. Today, Public Works recommends that the Board receive a staff report regarding the Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement and Klamath Hydroelectric Settlement Agreement, receive comments from the interested public, approve a resolution attached to the staff report authorizing the chair of the board or designee to sign the Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement and Klamath Hydroelectric Settlement Agreement. We recommend that the board designate Supervisor Duffy to sign and execute the agreements specified in the attached resolution on behalf of the board and direct the County Administrative Office to identify $3,000 in supplemental funding for the water management budget to support staff participation in Klamath agreement coordination during fiscal year 2009 in 2010, and include that funding in the mid-year budget report. Finally, we recommend that the board direct staff to work with the County Administrative Office and Supervisor Duffy to develop a plan, including roles and responsibilities, level of involvement, and funding opportunities for Humboldt County's participation in the implementation of the Klamath agreements, and bring the plan back to the board for review and approval. This staff report brings the final versions of the Klamath agreements to the board for review and consideration of approval. Humboldt County has actively participated in the Klamath settlement negotiation process since it began in earnest in 2006 with Supervisor Duffy as the designated representative for the county. One of the challenges of working in the Klamath is depicting the watershed on one legible map. This is an attempt to do that. The Klamath River Basin extends over 10 million acres. It spans two states and nine counties. The Klamath River discharges to the ocean in Del Norte County, and then it trends in a southeast direction through Humboldt County towards Wichipec, where there is the confluence with the Trinity River. Then the river trends in a northeast direction up into Siskiyou County, and then into southern Oregon and towards Upper Klamath Lake. This shows the six dams that are on the main stem of the river. This map depicts some of the important facilities and some, but certainly not all, of the stakeholders involved in this issue. Close to the state line, you see the Klamath Hydroelectric Project. There are four dams owned and operated by the utility PacifiCorp to generate hydroelectric power. There's also the Klamath Irrigation Project. The Federal Bureau of Reclamation operates two dams and associated facilities for water storage and providing water for agricultural use to farmers and irrigators. There's also entities using water upstream and downstream of the irrigation project. There's land owned by BLM, National Wildlife Refuges. This map also depicts the presence of Klamath tribes up around Upper Klamath Lake, and then going downstream, the Crook tribe, Hoopah tribe, and Yurok tribe. And then along the coast, this map depicts the presence of commercial fishermen who are deeply affected by the issue. The Klamath Basin has a long history of competing demands for water. The conflicts intensified in the 90s. In 2001, there was a summer drought, and in response to regulatory action by the National Marine Fisheries Service and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the Bureau of Reclamation shut off irrigation deliveries to agricultural customers of the reclamation project. Some of the consequences of that action were financial losses by farmers, protest, litigation, and also controversy over the scientific basis for those regulatory actions. In 2002, after a wet winter and intervention by the Department of the Interior, the regulatory actions were reversed, water diversions were restored, and then in the fall of 2002, in August and September, there was a major fish kill event that was directly caused by an outbreak of a parasitic disease, but it was associated with low river flows, warm temperatures, and high fish density. The conflict and the litigation continued. In 2004, the utility PacifiCorp initiated the formal process of applying to renew its 50-year license from the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission to continue operating the four dams for hydroelectric power. Humboldt County was one of several parties filing a motion to intervene in that proceeding on behalf of fishermen and fishing communities in partnership with tribes and other parties. The county's position was that the dams result in unacceptable downstream impacts to water quality and block the passage of fish that are an important resource for the county. Conditions in the river continued to worsen, and in 2006, the federal government took the step of essentially shutting off the commercial fishing season. Boats stayed at their docks, fishermen were out of work, and there were emergency declarations for the fish closure. That brief history gives some of the context for the situation in 2006. There was conflict over competing demands for water. The four dams were in place, blocking fish passage, causing downstream degradation of water quality. And there was various legal actions occurring in different venues with different parties Parties were winning some, losing some, and there was really no comprehensive solution in sight within a legal framework. So in 2006, certain parties began to discuss settlement and negotiation in an effort to achieve a more comprehensive solution. This table shows, and the following table shows parties involved, representation of different departments from the federal government, state of California, state of Oregon, affected tribes, the utility PacifiCorp, counties, representation for irrigation interests in the upper basin, and then conservation groups that have been involved. The result of the 4 years of negotiation are an agreement package. The restoration agreement, hydroelectric agreement, the draft restoration agreement was released 2 years ago. Over the last few months, we've been discussing the hydroelectric agreement. In total, your board has heard this issue over four meetings during the last 2 years. The agreements provide a framework to deal with both dams and water use, and they line out a process leading to the presumptive removal of the four lowermost dams on the river. The settlement group met together in late December and early January. The agreements were finalized, and now the review process has ended. And so the decision before your board is whether to become a signatory party to the agreements. The parties have set a deadline of February 9th to provide a notice to participate. They're scheduling a signing ceremony. There's also to follow that date. There's also a provision in the agreement that allows potential participating parties to sign within 60 days of the official, the designated deadline currently. So I'll go through some of the key provisions in each agreement. The stated goals of the restoration agreement include restoring fisheries on the Klamath River to the point where they provide for full participation in harvest opportunities for tribes and sport and commercial fishermen. Number two, to provide a reliable and sustainable water and power to agricultural users and the affected communities, as well as national wildlife refuges in the upper basin. And finally, an important goal of these agreements is to end the Klamath water wars, to have different interests working together, acknowledging and recognizing their differences, but trying to work together and have litigation be a last resort measure. Key provisions in the restoration agreement include programs for fisheries and water resources, programs that address county and tribal interests, and also some legal sections on regulatory assurances. Just in brief, the fisheries program includes major efforts for both habitat restoration and reintroduction of fish in the hundreds of miles of potential habitat that are currently blocked by the dams. I won't go into the details of the fishery program, but I'll say more about the water resources program. The water resources program presents a strategy to deal with the scarcity and the competing demands for water. Three of the main elements of that strategy include increasing storage for Upper Klamath Lake, developing a program for voluntary retirement of water uses, and then implementing a reduction and a cap on the total volume of water that is diverted from the reclamation project for agricultural use. In terms of increasing storage for the Upper Klamath Lake, the agreement identified the feasibility of three projects that could provide a total of over 100,000 acre-feet of water. When we talk about water storage in those quantities, we talk about acre-feet, the amount of water that would cover an acre to 1 foot of depth. One of those projects has been completed, and there's two others that are that have been identified as being feasible.
Does the TAF, is the T total?
T is 1,000.
Oh, 1,000. Okay, thank you.
Correct. The second piece of the water strategy is water use retirement, and through the development of the agreement, they've targeted retirements that could result in an increase in inflow to the Upper Klamath Lake of 30,000 acre-feet. And then finally, the diversions. And this is probably the most scrutinized and considered aspect of the agreement. This graph is an attempt to summarize a very complicated program. The agreement sets up a framework where the allocation for water diversion is dependent on the amount of water available from year to year. So it would vary from dry to moderate to wet years. The horizontal axis shows the amount of water that is forecasted to be available during the dry season from April to September. And that's the net inflow of water to the Upper Klamath Lake. So dry years would be on the left, you know, ranging from 1 to 300,000 acre feet. Medium years would be in the middle, and then wet years would be on the right. The black line depicts the cap on water diversions for the reclamation project. And you can see on dry years at the left, the cap on diversions would be 330,000 acre feet. And then during medium years, there'd be a sliding scale. And then during wet years, there would be a cap at 385,000 acre feet. The circles depict historical water use for a 40-year period from 1961 to 2000. You can see that in that record, there were years with diversions that exceeded what is being contemplated in this agreement. And so with this agreement, diversions at that level during those dry years would not be repeated. This graph depicts a total volume of water for a season. The flip side of that is looking at the flows in the river and the effects that it has on fisheries. And that's a very a complicated issue. It's been subject to a lot of scientific analysis and modeling. It's important to look at the life history of the affected species, what conditions they need, what habitat availability they need. And so again, that's been one of the most important aspects of this agreement. It's been looked at by fish biologists and hydrologists. As it stands now, agencies from the federal government, National Marine Fisheries, Fish and Wildlife Service, and USGS, California Department of Fish and Game, scientists from the Yurok Tribe and Crook Tribe, and different conservation organizations have reviewed the technical basis for this water program and the agreement, and they support it. In addition, the North Coast Environmental Center hired two independent consultants in 2008 to review the restoration agreement, and Thomas Hardy and Greg Kamen both issued letters indicating their support. It's important to acknowledge that there are organizations that have expressed concern about the water resources program. That includes the Hoopaw Valley Tribe and the North Coast Environmental Center. Other important aspects of the restoration agreement include a framework to more closely manage water releases from the dam that provides the outlet for Upper Klamath Lake, that is the Link River Dam. And so the restoration agreement creates a framework where the Department of Interior will be advised by a technical advisory team composed of representatives from participants in the restoration agreement. And so this will provide for an annual management of water in the upper basin. There's balancing to be done. There are species in the Upper Klamath Lake that need water and certain water elevations in the lake, and then there's species in the downstream river that have their water needs. And so there's a balancing to be done. What the agreement envisions is that over the winter, an annual water management plan will be developed based on the forecasts for the year. And then in addition, there will be real-time management through the dry year, basically on a two-week basis, where releases from the uppermost dam will be controlled based on the needs of the affected species and the balancing that needs to be done. The restoration agreement calls for the development of a drought plan to deal with the inevitable contingencies of droughts for a typical drought. They would look at measures such as additional conservation, water leases, and short-term groundwater use. And there's also provisions for extreme drought, and that is defined based on certain conditions. Looking at the historical record from 1961 to 2000, there's 2 years that have been identified as the criteria that would trigger extreme drought. And the agreement specifies that additional limitations to water diversions may be implemented in the event of an extreme drought. And the agreement provides a framework for carrying that through. I want to note that the restoration agreement includes provisions that deal with water rights for affected tribes and the federal government. I'm not going to go into the details of that, but just note that they're there and that that's something that the tribes and the federal government have looked at very closely and continue to look at. And then finally, the agreements explicitly state that participating parties commit to complying with all applicable regulatory authorities, including the Endangered Species Act. So between the drought plan and the Endangered Species Act, there's two important backstops to the interests of the fisheries. And the agreements are intended to provide for sustainable water needs for fisheries, but in the event that there continue to be depleted stocks, the agreement does foresee that additional measures may be needed. I'll summarize the county's agreement. We've discussed that in the last two meetings. The restoration agreement acknowledges that there would be benefits to the county resulting from restoration of the watershed and the fisheries. Potential impacts associated with dam removal and other restoration activities will be evaluated under CEQA, including impacts to county roads and infrastructure. CEQA requires that significant impacts are mitigated. The restoration agreement specifies a backup plan in the event that certain impacts are not sufficiently mitigated for the counties to work with Department of Fish and Game to address those impacts. The final agreements have not changed substantially from the initial draft agreements, but one change is that the county's program does contain a new authorization, and it says that excess funds from the California bond contribution to the dam removal, which we'll talk about in a minute, any excess funds from that bond contribution could be used for fishery restoration in the participating counties in cooperation with Fish and Game. So that's a future contingency that was added to the agreement in the final version. And finally, as a signatory party, the county would agree to support the agreements. The level of support is left to our discretion. The county would also agree not to file claims resulting from decreases in property value or other losses associated with dam removal. And finally, the restoration agreement lays out what's called the Klamath Basin Coordinating Council, as well as a Klamath Basin Advisory Council, very important entities involved with management and implementation of the agreements. The agreements don't necessarily predict the future or know what's going to unfold in the future, and they've tried to think ahead in terms of what could happen, but there is a process to meet and confer in the event that circumstances arise that that is not specifically envisioned within the agreement. That's the dispute resolution process. And finally, the funding for the agreement for implementation, the 10-year total cost comes to $1 billion, which is intended to come from both federal and state funding. Some of that is new funding, and some of that is reallocation of existing funds. The second of the two agreements, the hydroelectric settlement agreement, it establishes a three-step process for the presumption of dam removal. All indications are that it is in the public interest to remove the dams. However, before the Department of the Interior can commit to that decision, they need to implement a process to do a complete environmental review and to do further evaluation of potential impacts. The target for that, the so-called secretarial determination, is in early 2012. If that determination is affirmative, then the identified party to remove the dams would prepare a so-called definite plan with the details for construction and fiscal management. And the target timeline for dam removal is 2012. I'm sorry, 2020. Thank you. In terms of funding for dam removal, there's a cost-sharing framework where the first $200 million will come from PacifiCorps ratepayers, and then if costs exceed that amount, then up to $250 million would come from California bond funding or other sources. So the first step of the three-step process is the secretarial determination. One of the important studies that needs to be completed is a full analysis of the sediment quantity and quality that's retained behind the dams. And the Department of the Interior will need to verify that the projected benefits of dam removal does in fact exceed the potential risks and liabilities associated with that action. The federal government is obligated to comply with NEPA. California will need to comply with CEQA as well. And part of that process will be identifying the specific entity that will be responsible for dam removal. Currently, that's presumed to be the Department of Interior. The target for dam removal is 2020. The hydroelectric agreement specifies a list of interim measures that would be applicable to PacifiCorps for operation of the dams and other mitigation actions to improve water quality and improve conditions for fish in the interim before dam removal. The entity identified to implement the dam removal will develop the definite plan that will include just many details that are needed, necessary details that are needed for successful implementation to avoid unintended impacts and compliance with all applicable laws. So there'll be a full permitting process for that. There is a focused limited liability waiver in the agreement to PacifiCorps for the specific action of the dam removal that will be implemented by an entity other than the utility. So it's very focused on the dam removal and limiting PacifiCorps' liability for that action. In addition, the second dam going downstream, the Keno Dam, will be transferred from PacifiCorps to Bureau of Reclamation. And so PacifiCorps will be out of the picture in terms of dam operation on the Klamath. And just to review, the schedule targets are the secretarial determination, an official decision whether or not to pursue dam removal by March 31st, 2012, begin decommissioning by 2020, and complete within 1 year. Based on Public Works' review of these agreements, we found that they are long and complex by necessity. They're very complicated issues, and it's clear that a lot of smart people have tried to put these together and find that delicate balance. Based on our review, the agreements appear to be based on strong science that's been conducted in a transparent fashion. One of the goals of these agreements was to avoid the contention and the conflict, and the vision was that parties with different interests would acknowledge each other's interests and work together in partnership, in collaboration. That's not necessarily reflected in the paper of the agreements, but it is the background for these agreements. And it is true that the agreements have been written to be implemented in tandem as a package. Dam removal is a necessary but not a sufficient condition for recovery of the fisheries. Fishery recovery will depend on both dam removal and improvements to in-stream flows in the Klamath. And so this agreement package is a strategy to achieve that goal. The agreements do not guarantee fishery recovery or dam removal, but based on where we are today, it appears that they provide a solid strategy for success. Thinking about alternatives to these agreements, if the hydroelectric agreement is terminated, then the affected parties would return to the relicensing proceeding under the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. FERC has never required a dam owner to remove a dam as part of a relicensing effort. And so if the situation were returned to the FERC framework, then the results in terms of the dams would be uncertain. And it's inevitable that there would be court reviews and appeals. As far as water flows in the Klamath, if the agreements fail or are terminated, then it's inevitable that there will be a return to the regulatory approaches that have been attempted in the past. And those approaches are inherently limited. You can think of them as being more defense than offense. They're really, especially the Endangered Species Act, is oriented towards preventing extinction, but it's not the proactive approach that this agreement envisions. Some of the benefits for Humboldt County to participate in this agreements include the opportunity to continue to advocate for specific county interests, our fishermen and our fishing communities. I think these agreements have benefited from the partnership between the different levels of government and the accountability that brings, and continued participation would I think also benefit the likelihood for success. One of the first challenges of these agreements will be to see the legislation through in Congress and the funding allocations, and I think Humboldt County can work with the other partners on that. In addition, becoming a signatory party would enable the county to receive the benefits that are detailed in the specific county program of the restoration agreement. And finally, participation in the implementation will provide an opportunity to be involved firsthand, and then to bring the results and the firsthand experiences back to the board for periodic updates, and also to provide a venue for the public to understand the progress of the implementation. Other potential participants are reviewing the agreements. The current deadline is February 9th for providing notice of intent to sign. There is a provision for 60 days after that date to for participants to sign without requiring an amendment to the agreement. And then after 60 days, there are certain terms that that would enable an organization to apply for consideration to become a signatory party. Activities for 2010 include formation of the working committees that are defined by the agreements. PacifiCorp will begin implementing the interim measures defined in the hydroelectric agreement, and some actions will begin immediately, while others will wait for the legislation to pass through Congress. And finally, if Humboldt County decides to become a signatory party, Public Works is recommending that we work with the COO's office and Supervisor Duffy to develop a participation plan to identify roles and responsibilities and the level of involvement for that implementation. That ends the staff report.
Well, thank you very much. And let me be the first to say great photographs, couple of really nice graphs that helped me immensely. So any board member comments at this point before we hear from the public? Supervisor Duffy.
I want to thank Hank for his succinct presentation, a very complicated process that has taken us many years and many emails and many meetings and many caucuses that has resulted in the work that is before you today. I realize that it can seem like a rather voluminous, but if you could see the amount of documentation which supports these agreements, I'm not sure who's ringing. you know, and really over the last 8 years, there's been an unprecedented alignment of events that have resulted in our being here today. We've been able to successfully negotiate these agreements in large because collectively the parties have sat at the table. And that sitting at the table came with years of preconceptions about each other, our communities, and the unspoken tension and distrust that, you know, existed prior to. Shortly after I was elected to the board, but prior to my being seated, there was a meeting that was held in the Yurok Tribal Chambers, and we had representatives from the commercial fishing, the environmental community, as well as many tribal members that were there. And it was interesting because there was still a lot of dancing around amongst those parties because of years of litigation that had served to further divide a lower basin that really should have been naturally more in cohesion. And what I've seen happen over the years is that in the forging of these agreements, which have entailed a significant commitment of the personal work which is necessary, the technical work, as well as the legal work, we really work to, I guess the word is persevere. That's what this group really worked to do. We developed the understandings. We discovered, you know, the points of agreement that kept the various parties at the table. And we were able to provide the assurances. And we were sincerely committed to seizing the opportunity that was before us. We likely will not have another opportunity like this one if we miss this one, this opportunity we have before us. One of the things that we know is that without a durable solution, the basin-wide conflicts will continue, and we know that we will see just a continued downward spiral. We know that dam removal is essential to restore salmon populations, and we know that dam removal will work towards improvement of water quality. And the non-removal of these dams will result in the status quo, and we know what that is. One of the comments that has been made has been relative to the $20 million that will be required from the power customers for the surcharge, $200 million, excuse me, $200 million that is going to be collected from the surcharge for the power rate customers from Del Norte, Siskiyou, and Klamath counties. And one of the things that's important to note is that if the dams remain in place and FERC were to relicense them, Pacific Corps is still going to be required to put into place mitigations necessary for the protection of fish and water quality improvements. That price tag is $350 million for those necessary mitigations. That's not free money. The $200 million, people have said, well, is it fair to burden them, is going to be significantly less than the cost of leaving the dams in place for those same power customers. Further, and so that's just from an economic perspective for those immediate power customers, further, our commercial, our tribal, and our in-river fisheries will continue to be impacted. And again, we've been watching the slow decimation of both the fish as well as the economic benefit that they provide to our counties, our communities. Part of what this restoration agreement process has helped to facilitate is the development of a strong relationship between the upper and lower basin. And we've all been working with this common purpose in mind. We know that the KBRA and the KHSA are not perfect, but it does serve as a real-world blueprint, which is going to meet the needs. And Hank, I'm going to ask that you go back to your slide. I think it was number 3. That's what I want to point out. And maybe it can maybe capture this one here. Capture what we're discussing here. There are 4 tribes within the region, and along with them comes the trust responsibility for legally protected cultural and economic ties to fish. The Klamath project, the Klamath hydroelectric irrigation project down here, is one of the oldest federal projects. And it's unique in many ways. It does not have carryover storage, and there is no fish passage in through here. There are 6 wildlife refuges, which are located on the Pacific Flyway, and they currently lack water rights. There are also 5 national forests, as well as inholdings of some BLM lands. Hank touched on the 3 listed species of fish, which include coho, the Lost River, and short-nosed sucker. Along the coastline, as is noted, the sport commercial fishermen up and down the coast are also affected. And the one thing that we haven't spent a whole lot of time talking about has been the number of state and federal economic bailouts. Taxpayer monies that have been, you know, funneled into this basin in order to mitigate for the various crises that we have continued to experience. The agreements are not the final point. And as I noted, the way I've viewed them has been more in the context of a blueprint, and that blueprint is really the development of what we're building. It contains the components, the elements, and the actions that are going to be necessary for the removal of the 4 dams as well as the restoration of the Klamath River. At stake today is whether or not Humboldt County is going to have a voice in the future of the Klamath River over the next 50 years. I've spent the last 8 years working on Klamath issues, which in comparison to many people that have spent their lives is just a drop in the bucket. And over the last 5 years specifically, it's been in the development of these agreements. These agreements that many people have said would never come to bear. I strongly believe that this is an opportunity that's not going to present itself again in our lifetime, and I respectfully urge the board to support these agreements. The one thing I do want to note, in addition to the outline of activities that are the next step, is that the group is going to be developing the work plan in order to start identifying the KBCC and the KBAC, as well as the drought plan that needs to be developed this year. And the other part of the heavy lifting that's going to be required is going to be the federal legislation that will be introduced. We anticipate that Congressman Thompson will be sponsoring this legislation, and we are very concerned that as it works its way through the congressional halls, that the intent of this agreement be implemented as we have developed it, which is going to require a lot of bird dogging, if you will. And with that, Chairman Clendon, and I appreciate the latitude of just being able to kind of speak to this, because it really has been many, many years. I would respectfully ask, we do have a couple of members who have to be up in Wairika for a meeting this afternoon. And that's the challenge of this basin. It's huge. Geographically, it's absolutely huge. And so with
I really appreciate your framing, and with the board's indulgence, Supervisor Lovelace?
I just have two quick questions for staff, mm-hmm. if I may. In discussing the agreements for the county, the county program, you noted that there is an agreement not to file a claim in federal or state court arising from any decrease in property tax revenue or alleged business or economic losses, et cetera. Does that agreement on behalf of the county in any way inhibit or prevent actions by any non-signatory party?
I don't believe it does. I don't believe there's any limitation for non-signatory parties.
Thank you. And additionally, a side issue that's been talked about in this has been Humboldt County has a contractual water right to 50,000 acre feet from the Trinity River from the 1955 Trinity River Act. The documents are mute on that point. It's my understanding that it in no way inhibits the county's ability to continue to pursue its right to that 50,000 acre feet. Is that correct?
Correct.
Thank you.
Okay. Supervisor Smith.
One very quick comment. Like many of the people that are here with us today, I've been involved in the Klamath Basin issues all of my adult life. And, Hank, I just want to compliment you and Department of Public Works for just the magnitude, degree of specifics in your presentation. You've done a tremendous job of consolidating all this information to bring it forward today. So it's a great job. Great job.
Okay. So let's see. I'm going to let you call forth the speakers that you know that need to travel.
Erica and Molly? And I do appreciate, well, I mean, normally we do open it, and I realize that Erica, and by way of introduction, Erica Terrence, really filled the shoes of Tim McKay after his passing in the course of the negotiations. She really wrapped her brain around this document and the science behind it, and really became a very strong force within the room with her pointed questions and her ability to sit down and do the work that has been necessary. So I really want to thank you, and we've missed you tremendously in the work, but good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Supervisor Geist. It would be difficult to completely fill the shoes of Tim McKay, but again, thanks for the nice words. And thank you all also for trying to accommodate my schedule, which, as you mentioned, is pretty tight today. So good morning, Chair and members of the board. Thanks for taking the time to hear from the public today on the future of the Klamath River, its fisheries, and its fishing peoples. This is not the first time I've appeared before you to talk about the contents of the Klamath Hydroelectric Settlement Agreement and its companion Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement, but the last time I spoke to you on the subject, several years ago, I was working for the North Coast Environmental Center. Today, I'm here to testify on behalf of another nonprofit who I now work for, Klamath River Keeper, coming from our world headquarters in Orleans, California. Most days, I move ahead with conviction that supporting the settlement to remove four dams in Oregon and California and shift the balance of flows in the Klamath River Basin is the right thing to do. The science supports it. The strategy invites it, and the political realities necessitate it. But sometimes I hit a day when the complexities of the hydropower and restoration agreements still overwhelm me, even after years of wrestling with lawyers and scientists to get it right. On those days, I would give most anything to go back and have a conversation with my old mentor and former boss, Tim McKay, respected environmental activist and longtime director of the North Coast Environmental Center in Arcata. It was there at the NEC during McKay's last 6 months that I got my start working at environmental nonprofits after graduating from college, although protecting the environment is something that I've worked at pretty much since my birth, 7 miles up the Salmon River. After Tim died in 2006, I stood in as the NEC negotiator for a few years and conducted an independent scientific review, which you heard mentioned earlier, of the controversial water allocations negotiators tied to dam removal. Without much to go on from McKay, I had to solicit new analysis and form my own opinions about the settlement. Still, in my current post as Klamath River Keeper, I often wonder, what would McKay think about the settlement released in the fall of 2009 and due for legislative approvals and funding this year? It's impossible to know. But I remember some advice from McKay to me in a wilderness campaign. You all probably remember the last time we had a wilderness bill that was passed through Congress, and I was working at the NEC, and I asked him, what do you think? Can I go to D.C. and help lobby for that bill? Tim said, yeah, I think you should do it. I think you should go to D.C. and learn how D.C. works, learn how to move through the legislative channels in D.C. But he also said, and I really remember this very clearly, I also want you to weigh, before you go and as you go and after you come home, that different people have real different opinions about that wilderness bill. There were definitely compromises made, and those compromises are viewed as, you know, worthwhile by some and not worth it by others. Some people think we should scrap this wilderness bill and start over. Some people think we should take what we're getting in this round and go on to fight for more wilderness protections in the next round. And I said, well, what do you think, Tim? And he said, doesn't matter what I think. Figure out what you think. And so that's really what I've tried to do, is follow Tim's advice as I think about it. As an individual who sorted through several years of negotiations and scrutinized the science more than most, I'll be the first to tell you that these agreements are full of risk. Let me also be the first to tell you that the agreements offer benefits to the river and its rural communities that I believe outweigh their inherent risks. Sadly, a snapshot of the Klamath today is a picture of communities who have settled for paper fish instead of the scaly kind for far too long already. Communities ready to finally settle for a net gain instead of a loss. And what do I mean when I say paper fish? Paper fish are the elusive kind promised in long meetings, model runs, and reports written by government agencies. They're the kind we've been fighting over for decades in court, with little to show for it besides steadily declining populations of fish in the river. This settlement poses the most viable way to remove the dams, improve flows in the river, and sustain farming economies while placing a stewardship responsibility on government agencies and residents from the headwaters to the mouth of the river. This opportunity to have real fish, a healthier river, and smarter agriculture is too good to pass up. And the risk of inaction is one we can't afford. It's time to move forward and do something good for the Klamath River. Klamath Riverkeeper respectfully recommends that Humboldt County sign the agreements with the understanding that the next phase, the implementation phase, is at least as crucial as the negotiation phase. We now need to turn our energies to ensuring that this agreement is properly funded, interpreted, and enacted. Thanks.
Thank you very much. I believe Supervisor Duffy, do we have another participant that is on a timeline?
Erica, did you have? Okay. She was the one that was on the timeline then.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. So we are going to attempt to hold the testimony time down here. Typically, we do 3 minutes. If the board's willing, maybe on this item, feel like it makes sense to do 5 minutes. Any opinions on that? Okay. So let's do. Let's have the. And we have that capability on our timer, do we not, Nikki? Okay, great. So I believe that was about what Erica got there. So to be even-handed here, we're going to do 5 minutes, and I'll just certainly...
A trendsetter.
And I would just like to point out that length is not necessarily power, so you know, don't feel like you need to use 5 minutes. So anyway, moving along, let's hear from the next speaker. Do we have any other members of the public that would like to speak here?
I won't need 5 minutes. My name is Molly White. I'm a Kadook tribal member. I got involved with the Klamath Dam stuff when I was about 18 years old, and we've been working on undamming the Klamath for a long time. We've been all over the country. I flew to Scotland. I've been in a lot of board meetings like this one. And I'm just here today to let you guys know that I am a supporter of the agreements. I have been on this long road like all these other guys have. And we know there's risk in the agreements, but at this point, we're ready to take that on. And I also respectfully request that you guys sign the agreements. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next speaker, please.
Hey, good morning.
Welcome.
Supervisors. My name is Craig Tucker. I work for the Kadook tribe. I'm the campaigner for the Kadook tribe and also point person in the negotiations. And I think you've all heard us express our support for the agreement and urging you guys to sign the agreement. And I would just point out this year is a case in point of why this agreement is important. I know it's hard to imagine that we're headed into a drought given the last couple of weeks of rain, but there is no snowpack in the Upper Klamath, and our models are showing us that not only will there not be any irrigation going on at the beginning of the irrigation season, we are not going to be able to meet the ESA mandates for lake levels and river flows this spring. We can't. There's not enough water to do that, and there's not going to be enough water to do that. And so we're going to be in this position this spring trying to figure out how we can balance the lake and the river. If we had this agreement implemented, we would have had some flexibility through the winter to save water. Right now, these winter flows is about 1,300 CFS at Iron Gate Dam. And this was a flow regime that was essentially set in a courtroom. What we know is the difference between 1,300 CFS in December, January, and February and 1,000 CFS during those months has a very small impact on fish production. But a few hundred CFS come April, May, and June has a huge impact on fish production. So if we were managing the river today under the terms of this agreement, we would have been able to save some water this winter, we would have filled the lake up sooner, and we would have had a much better spring to make fish. And that's the kind of flexibility and management flexibility these agreements give us that we don't have today. So my council will be having a similar vote, a formal vote like this, later this week. I'm very optimistic that my council will go forward and sign this agreement. They've been strong advocates and aggressive participants throughout the whole process. You guys are really lucky. I think Hank just gave about the best, most accurate presentation I've seen any non-party to this process give, and it's I was very impressed. Usually I'm sitting over there grumbling, he screwed that up, but he really did nail it. And I would say you're also lucky because Supervisor Duffy has been a remarkable representative for the county, and I look forward to seeing my chairman and Supervisor Duffy and others on the podium together very soon to sign this agreement. And we've already been plotting, we're going to bring all of our children to this thing so that we can explain to them why Mommy and Daddy is always late for dinner. It's because we've been working on this. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thank you. And do we have anyone else who'd like to speak here? Please come forward.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Dana Rose, I've been here before. I just kind of want to thank you guys for backing us all up. We're here to back you guys all up. Hopefully, we can get fish for everybody. Thank you, guys.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anyone else like to? Please come forward.
Thank you. I'm Dave Bitts. I'm a local commercial salmon and crab fisherman, although this year I'm afraid I wasn't a crab catcherman, but so it goes. And also I'm president of the Pacific Coast Federation of Fishermen's Associations. We will be also considering these agreements later this week, Thursday, and deciding whether to support them. And I'm pretty confident that we will decide to support the agreements. Our negotiator, Glenn Spain, has given 3-5 years of his life to getting these agreements worked out, working side by side with Jill and many others, and he will be walking us through the whole thing later this week. As a salmon fisherman, I'm kind of standing here on one leg this morning. I'm standing on my Klamath leg because my Sacramento leg isn't very good right now. and so I have to proceed with confidence that my Sacramento leg is going to be recovered eventually, and that I and other salmon fishermen are going to be able to walk again. But if that's going to happen, we need to have our Klamath leg in good shape too. And clearly, these agreements are our best chance of having that happen. There is some concern, of course, because we do have these two legs, and the Sacramento leg that's in such bad shape right now is also a little worried about the peripheral canal, which is included in the Bond Act that will be before voters, I believe, this November. And that Bond Act also expressly includes the $250 million for the dam removal, which may be needed. And we're not at all eager to see the peripheral canal happen. And all in all, we're probably not going to be big supporters of this Bond Act. However, we have noticed that there are $5 billion of bonds authorized but not sold. And is that right? I think that's right, $5 billion. And it's entirely we believe it's entirely possible that within the language of authorization for those bonds can be found the scope to use a small portion of that money and sell a small portion of those bonds to meet the state's $250 million share of this funding obligation in the event that, as we hope it will, the Bond Act fails in November. So that's our little finesse to get around that problem of how we walk out of here with two legs if the one leg ever recovers. So I think that's it. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Please come forward. And then if we could maybe have the next speaker kind of be queued up, it might get a little more timely here. Thank you.
Just a quick few quick words. My name is Troy Fletcher. I'm a Yurok tribal member, and I've been worked for the Yurok tribe on these negotiations. And for us, it's been about our culture. It's been about the health of the river. And it's been about how do you provide a pathway forward that advances fisheries restoration. Yeah, there are risks here, but there is no alternative. There is no pathway to go. There's tremendous risk with status quo. And so I agree with Erica. Paper fish is one thing. This is real, and Hank talked about it too. Our job here, if this is passed, is really going to be how do we implement this thing? How do we move this forward? How do we remain diligent? And I look forward to the day when we can come before you and talk about at least 50,000 acre feet being devoted to the Trinity River. And I think it's a time that we think about the record of decision on the Trinity, that the minimum flows on the Trinity are not enough water to protect fish. And that agreement was made with the condition that funding had to be made available for mechanical restoration of the main stem. We need to do something about that. It's not a funding issue only. It's a water issue as well. And so I'm glad that it's made clear your ability to address that isn't impacted in any way. So we would urge you to support this. our real work will start the day after we sign this thing. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Welcome, Pat.
Good morning, Patrick Higgins. Is it possible that the board could receive my remark?
We'd be happy to.
Good morning. Cliff, thank you very much, Board of Supervisors, for allowing me to address you on the Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement. As you know, I'm Patrick Higgins, a fisheries biologist and watershed scientist who has studied the Klamath River for over 20 years. I have the highest regard for many who have crafted this deal, and some are my personal friends. However, it is my professional opinion that even if all the measures called for under the KBRA are implemented, the Pacific salmon will be faced with mass extinctions in the Klamath, likely to occur between 2015 and 2025 due to predicted decadal shifts in ocean and climate cycles and the onset of global warming. While the deal before you involves the removal of four dams, there are actually six, and while we need to retain Keno Dam or Link Dam that regulates Upper Klamath Lake, Keno Dam, 12 miles downstream of Klamath Falls, needs to be removed and or the pollution in the reservoir abated. The high level of pollution that enters the Klamath in this reach comes from farms and filled wetlands next to the reservoir and from the Klamath Project runoff from the bed of Lower Klamath Lake and Tule Lake and the Lost River. The cumulative effect of nutrient pollution in the Keno Reservoir is that it becomes anoxic, that is, devoid of life, 5 weeks a year. Under the KBRA, this problem will not be remedied. Consequently, fish disease epidemics that currently kill 40 to 90% of downstream migrants will continue, even if dams are removed. Only the location of fish death will vary. When Teddy Roosevelt set up the Lower Klamath Lake National Wildlife Refuge in 1908, there was a navigable channel between the river and Lower Klamath Lake, and one could travel 52 miles in a boat across it. This magnificent 90,000-acre lake and wetland complex was the water storage engine for the Klamath. It filled up all winter and spring and then ebbed with cold, clean water to fill the Klamath in summer and fall. The KBRA offers instead undefined sources of water from new water storage facilities that may never be built. Expanding the footprints of Tule Lake and Lower Klamath Lakes and the riparian zones and marsh complexes of the Lost River and Keno Reservoir is the only way to stop proliferation of nitrogen-fixing algae that are abundant in the project because it draws its water from Upper Klamath Lake. In other words, there's no way to turn off the nutrient pollution machine here other than to restore the historical balance, and the KBRA does not take that approach. The social solution to ecological problems does not get Humboldt County and Pacific Salmon what they need. There are clear and patent violations of state and federal law, Clean Water Act, Endangered Species Act, Port of Cologne Act, and they're leading to the decimation of enormously valuable public trust resources in the Upper Klamath. Instead of fighting to have this pollution abated and the law upheld, we've given up. We will condone business as usual under the deal. The duty to support provisions embedded in the KBRA that you're about to sign will restrict your ability to challenge those causing water pollution and that will continue to kill the river. Instead, I would recommend a trade pact with the Upper Klamath and Siskiyou County. Let's engage them in a realistic dialogue about the factors involved here. Global warming, pesticide pollution. New studies show that the ambient levels of pesticide pollution in our rivers kill fish in a lab. That's Pacific Northwest-wide USGS lates it all. Instead, I'd recommend this a trade pact. Let's offer them a realistic dialogue where if we could assist them in marketing or purchase salmon-safe products that might be twice the price, why are we not asking them to refill Tule Lake and Lower Klamath Lake as required by law? The removal of this bottleneck on the Pacific Flyway would lead to a major increase in duck and goose populations along with improved fishing and hunting opportunities and could help their region get a new lease on life through economic diversification. The KBRA will not likely pass Congress. The water bond for the Klamath deal is now tied to the peripheral canal. We'll likely be back at the drawing board regardless of your vote today. But if the KBRA bill is passed, your action now binds two generations of people in Humboldt County, 50 years going forward, in the face of global warming. Because of the confidentiality provisions of the settlement process and they're not being extended to include all board members, I don't think many of the board members sitting here have enough information on the substance of this deal to make a decision. This is a compromise for dam removal that does not meet the fish's needs, and I would urge you to vote no. This has remarkable similarity to the Headwaters deal, which I opposed in these chambers. And after passed, agencies turned a blind eye. Salmon streams were decimated. You can't expect the Clean Water Act, Lower Klamath Lake, Tule Lake, these magnificent water bodies to be healed in a 50-year time period in the event that you sign this.
Okay. Thank you. John, welcome.
Thank you. John Corbett, 1801 Ocean Drive, Yurok Tribe. Just a very few comments. First of all, the Act specifically maintains the Clean Water Act jurisdiction as well as the right to sue under the Endangered Species Act. I want to say, in one sense, Patrick Higgins reached agreement with Dr. Peter Moyle, who didn't want the dams taken out until there was about 10 to 20 years' worth of study on nutrient problems. Siskiyou County, that argues the nutrient problems make it's not much value to take the dams out. And many of those in the KBRA who felt nutrient problems are critical. I do want to say that the KBRA takes the view, we don't want to study nutrients anymore. And so it allocated, and like I said last time, and I joke around, I sort of have to keep it in the $50 million range for the Office of Management Budget. But it basically has $75 million for nutrient removal, dealing with the Keno reaches. I agree with everyone who says that has to be addressed. I see no other program on the horizon, no other program that's going to start. If we stay with the status quo, there will be some types of nutrient reduction that PacifiCorps is going to come up with. We don't think they'll work, but they'll do it. At the end of that time, let's say the dams come out, you're going to have the nutrient problem. So the KBRA said, let's get started on nutrient treatment and removal, and here's $50 million. Probably not enough for the $75 million. But I don't know anyone else who can deliver within a few years an approach to nutrient removal that's funded by $75 million. And the clear mandate of the KBRA is, assume the dams come out, so treat the nutrients from a watershed standpoint, treat it from the health of the Klamath River and what's needed after the dams come out. I've heard no viable alternative. Let's look at the landscape. The agricultural best management practices are going to span two states, Oregon and California. It's going to span some very different opinions on the regulatory process. And I cannot find a single model in the United States nor in California where California or Oregon or elsewhere has been able to get a multi-state best management ag practice that actually does the job to make it work. And we think we could, and we do think we can sue under the Clean Water Act, but we think we're talking 10 to 20 years. So what the KBRA offers is quit the studies, quit the complaining, let's get on with treating nutrients. It provides $50 million. I think I can slide $25 million over on the budget. And whether that's enough, you know, I have my doubts, but it's the best game in town. And $75 million isn't chump change. And there are significant background studies that are going on the best way to approach watershed nutrient treatment management. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome, Denver.
Good morning. Thank you. My name is Denver Nelson. I live in Cutton, California. I own property on the Lower Klamath River. I'm a member of the Humboldt County Fish and Game Commission and the State Groundwater Assistance Technical Advisory Panel and a few other entities as well, but I'm speaking today just solely for myself. I've been appearing before the Board of Supervisors many times in the nearly 30 years that I've been interested in Klamath solutions. Most recently, I appeared before the UN on the December 1st meeting. At that meeting and many previous meetings, I urged you to endorse these agreements, and I'm here today to urge you to approve the final versions of the Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement and the Hydroelectric Settlement Agreement. I'm pleased to tell you I've read all 603 pages of these agreements, as I'm sure you all have as well. Over the years of working on a Klamath, Tim McKay and I became close friends. We spent many hours together traveling to Klamath meetings. We argued a great deal, and we didn't always agree, but we came to know each other's positions on many topics, including Klamath issues. At the last meeting, I told you Tim McKay's argument for dam removal. His point that was that we only get a chance to remove these dams every 50 years. He thought we should work to remove these dams. I thought that realistically that would never happen. But here we are on the verge of accomplishing Tim's and my and many others' dream of dam removal. Since the last meeting, I've been accused by some of the newcomers to Klamath issues of channeling Tim McKay. I must admit that I have been channeling Tim McKay about these most recent agreements. We have discussed in great detail each and every of the 603 pages of the most recent agreement. But in the interest of fairness to Tim McKay and to those of you who are unable to channel him, I'm not going to give you his opinion of the current agreement. But I urge you to endorse the current Klamath Restoration and Hydroelectric Agreements. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker, please come forward.
Good afternoon. David Jensaw, Sr., you're a tribal councilman. I'm here to speak on behalf of our fish, therefore our people, our river, our lifeblood. We've heard many stories being passed down from us, from our ancestors, how thick the river was with salmon at one time. You could walk the backs of them. But I've lived in 2002 and seen the fish piled up on the shores of the Klamath, on the bottom of the river, in every eddy, down the middle of the river. So this is, you know, we take this serious. This is our life. I was raised on a river. I fished with the fishing pole. I fished with the gill net when we got our rights back in the 70s. I seen the federal marshals come down the river, full riot gear, M16s, stop us from fishing. I know of the Upper Basin irrigators that refused to keep the gates shut and open those gates. I didn't see no federal marshals or hear anybody think about federal marshals stopping them. So as Indian people in this agreement, in our livelihoods, we have to separate all this stuff out. We know those dams need to come down. We know what those fish need. We know what we need for survival. I know what paper fish is, and I know what paper promises are. And I also know that if fish can't survive in the water, without water, what makes us think that we will? So that's why, you know, we have to make these decisions and hope that we're all in it and we're all in there to keep them promises and we're all in for the fight and survival of our future generations. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Board Supervisor. My name is Joseph Lemieux. I'm from Hoopa, tribal member. I was sitting back here trying to think. I didn't come down here to do a testimony, but I sat there and listened. I do want to say that very good presentation, one of the best I've seen. I'm on a tribal council also, but I'm speaking as a tribal member today, if I don't. My grandmother was Yurok. My father's Tupa. So I talk about the 2 feet being Yurok, Hoopa. The dam's got to come out. Not opposed to the dams coming out at all. They have to come out. Of course, we live at Tupa. We live on the Trinity River. You all know about the fights that we've got going there with the taking of the water, taking more than what was required or what was agreed upon when Congress passed the act to put a dam in there. And all of that continued fighting, and we're still fighting that. We're trying to get the water and restore the fisheries. We know what the government can say. This is what concerns us, and you all know what our concern is. We've resisted termination. Some tribes, the Klamath tribes, they fell into that. We've resisted it at Hoopa because we didn't trust the language that was being said to Hoopa, to the government, for the government's language to the Indians. We're suspect of that language. One of the language, part of the words in this agreement talks about that the government doesn't care whether the Hoopa tribe wants to be a part. We will sign for you. Since we're your trustee, we'll sign for you, whether you like it or not. That's what's in that agreement. We can't sign on to something like that. So I just wanted to say that we would hope, not being a signature to this agreement, I think you sir, brought that up about what happens if you don't sign, a party that doesn't sign, what can they do? Can they sue? Not being a signature to this agreement, which looks like the way the Hoopas will go at this point, what is the county going to do in the future out at Hoopa or on the Trinity when we need your help? Will you say, well, you didn't sign, nothing we can do for you? I hope that's not what happens. But we don't know what the future will bring. But it's something that concerns us. But I do want to say, at the end of the day, the dams must come out. A lot of work has been done, and I know it takes a lot of work, lots of meetings, lots of discussions, and those all happened. We tried to, the Hoopa tribe tried to get back in. Things weren't going. We've had to pull back. So we're one of four tribes that is not being a party to it at this point. I wish that all four tribes together, they make a strong voice when they are together, but it just didn't happen this time around. So I thank you very much for your time, and as I say, the dams must come out. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker, please. Any other speakers that have not spoken yet? Richard, please come forward.
I think this agreement might be a good agreement, but then we got to start thinking about the Ill River, dams on the Ill River, and what it's doing to the fisheries on the Ill River. But
we'll get to that another day. Let's stay on this topic. Right. I think we've got a big one here in front of us.
Oh, I know. And I think maybe we should go ahead and sign this agreement, although I have to agree with the Hoopa tribe a little bit on this issue. And the environmental... The biologist that spoke, although I don't think any global warming that is it's been happening over and over again, but that's another subject too. And that's all I have. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Richard. Next speaker, please. Do we have any more speakers? Okay, and we'll bring it back to the board here. Supervisor Smith.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I want to thank our guests today. We really appreciate folks that have not just traveled to be here for the meeting today, but everybody that's paid attention from afar. I know I had lots of emails and lots of phone calls, as you all did over the course of the last few months, and especially in the last week or so, including some that came from an old friend that I trained in restoration work with a long time ago, Jed Ellingwood, that asked that we consider at some point in the future making sure that as programs are implemented for restoration activities in the basin, that we look back to the old days when there were priorities for Native Americans and people who were dependent on fisheries to be included in those employment programs. And I thought that was an old spark, and it was a good one just to speak to. And I also wanted to mention just very briefly that I did train in the Upper Klamath Basin with the Department of Fish and Game and with Fish and Wildlife Service, with U.S. Forest Service, and others, and learned a great deal, including from some of my friends that are here with us today with Yurok Tribe. So realizing the importance of these agreements and the work that's ahead of us, much of it's been talked about over the course of the morning. I again want to compliment everyone, and Commissioner Higgins brought up a lot of really, really good points, as did the Hoopoe Valley Tribe, and I look forward as one member to working with them and with our staff to try and resolve some of those issues in the future. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I want to move the staff recommendations, and I want to again thank my colleague from the 5th District for a tremendous amount of work over the course of the last few years, a lot of dedication and a lot of time away from family to be one of the prominent members of what I consider to be a really great team. Okay.
Thank you.
Second.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second to advance staff recommendations to approve Humboldt County's participation in these agreements. Supervisor Lovelace.
I have a few comments, and I'm also hoping that the maker and seconder of the motion may consider an amendment to the motion. But first, my comments. There's been a lot of talk about Tim McKay over the many months that, you know, the numerous times we've had this before us. And given that talk of channeling Tim, I thought to, you know, go back into my files over the many years and, you know, look at, you know, what actual communications did I have from Tim on this issue? And what was interesting to me was that the only ones I could find were the ones where the dream of dam removal was just that. It was a dream. It was not on the table in any way, shape, or form. It was, we were engaged in the FERC process. I attended the FERC hearing at the Red Lion Inn with Tim. I attended a number of regional water board hearings on the pollution issues in the Klamath. It was not on the table at that point. It was an idea that was being pushed. My own first interaction with Tim, the first time I met him, dealing with the Sunny Bay Forest Project years ago, I remember quite clearly his words of advice to me the first time I met him were, engage the process. And that's what I think has happened over the course of many years on this issue, has been many parties have engaged the process. They haven't simply stood outside the process. They've taken hold of it and recognized that to drive that process, you have to be a part of it. Backing up to that FERC hearing, that was 6 years ago. It's taken 6 years to get to this point, 6 years to bring something tangible out of that idea. And so when we look at a different path other than the one that we have before us and recognize that any other path is speculative at best. I said when we were considering the hydropower settlement agreement previously that I absolutely can imagine a better settlement. I can imagine a vastly better settlement. But can I imagine getting there, and can I imagine getting there sooner? And my answer to those questions are just no. This is a difficult process, and it's a very frustrating agreement that we have in front of us in a lot of ways. And I really recognize that there are a lot of giveaways and concessions in this to which, you know, no one in this room, no one downstream, I think, would like to be a part of. It's an unfortunate truism of legislation that it typically involves an element of extortion. And so our issue before us is, are the downsides of this so great that we're willing to give up the dream of dam removal for another 50 years, if not forever? And that's an issue that I think has been weighing upon all of us, and I'm sure weighing upon everyone that's had to make a difficult decision whether to support or not support this agreement. Now, as four of us up here at the dais, I think, have been in a different situation than our representative in that we have not been a part of the regular back and forth on this agreement. And there are areas of interpretation that we've heard from very passionate, well-informed people on both sides of the issue saying this means this, this means that. And there is an element of faith that we have to take in terms of, you know, reading this, weighing the arguments, and determining, you know, I believe this will achieve X instead of Y. So I think that when we take this action, that it's important that we really clarify what we're doing here and make sure that our action is strong, that we're stating the sense of purpose that as to why we're taking supporting this agreement. And very long-winded way, I know, but that brings me back to the amendment I would hope to see endorsed here, which is to pump up the resolution that we would sign, authorizing signature to this. And I've got a number of copies here.
Do you have copies for the members of the public too?
No, I do not. But I would like to read those.
Chairman Clendon, if I might.
Yes, Supervisor Duffy.
I'm very willing to give some consideration, but I do want to make sure that members of the public have an opportunity to review this on numerous occasions, including with the Northwest Training Center. I came in with some suggested revisions that would have significantly improved the content of the letter that was being sent to the Navy, and it was suggested by Supervisor Lovelace that those not be included because it did not have adequate time for review by either the public or the board itself. So I want to make it clear, I'm willing to look at this, but I am kind of concerned because sort of the tack that we have taken over the last year is not to give consideration at the time of the meeting. So what I would ask is if we could take a 10-minute break so that we can read this and make sure that members of the public have an opportunity to read this too. All right.
And I would support that.
Thank you.
Okay. It's 10:36. We will reconvene at...
Has county council had an opportunity to read this?
Yes.
We will.
I'm fine if you...
Supervisor Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Yeah. Chairman, and I apologize.
No problem.
But this is... I'm not sure that, well, I'd be happy to look at it, but this is a lot of language to add in.
Well,
let's take a break.
There's at least a dual purpose for a break here, so we'll reconvene at 10:46, excuse me.
Having had a chance to kind of run through this quickly, I'm going to need Supervisor Lovelace to present what his rationale is for the extraction of these particular whereases, because if they are actually in quotations, these are not complete from the document. There are many sections that it's pulling out of a particular section, but not actually the entire section. So if you want to, you know, if it's as you're presenting right here, it's problematic, number one. There's also a couple of miscitations. Third, whereas section 9.2 is actually 9.2.1. So I'm at a little bit of a loss, because you're wanting to pull from the agreement some quotations, which I don't disagree with, but I would ask why these particular sections warrant maybe a profiling versus the agreement as a whole. The agreement as a whole is what stands. The agreement as a whole is what is going to provide the framework for the work that we are involved in. I do concur that we should definitely have a whereas that specifies that the 1955 Congressional Act for the Trinity should have the not less than. I think that would be an appropriate thing to have included in the resolution itself. But I have to ask you why you are wanting to pull these forward when the adoption of the resolution as it stands right now is recognizing that we would be pulling in the document as a whole. And how do you want to address the issue of incomplete citations?
Okay.
Supervisor Lovelace.
And I'd be happy to. The first three, really, to me, when I looked at the resolution, it paraphrased and generalized concepts that are in the agreement. And I felt it was stronger to use the wording from the agreement itself to say that it's not that we're saying that there have been these impacts, you know, from the hydroelectric project, but that the agreement states X. In terms of why these are not an entire clause or entire section, was simply for brevity's sake, but it does cite the section so that I don't believe it's trying to change. And certainly I think it's more accurate to the agreement than coming up with wording that simply isn't in the agreement at all. So that was my intent on those. Some of the others, there have been, you know, comments made in terms of the concern that these agreements and the implementation of these agreements will not be subject to CEQA, will not be subject to NEPA or the Endangered Species Act, or that they foreclose the opportunities for other parties to seek actions, some of these kinds of things. So that's why I'm trying to pull these forward. Two of these were points of clarification that I asked for of staff during discussion to make sure that they're addressed. And that would be the 50,000 acre foot component and the ability for other parties to, or non-signatory parties to, pursue action or, protect their rights. And other than that, I was just trying to take some of what I've heard over the months that we've had this issue out there, some of the concerns, and find the sections that I think most address those. Obviously, these aren't the technical sections. It's not attachment E5 tables, 1 through 7. Those kinds of things. It's the overarching language, perhaps. And again, I just felt like it is stronger for us to be able to say, here's what's actually in the agreement in its own words, and these are the things that are the reasons that we are able to support this agreement. because, as has been noted in discussion here, the implementation of the agreement is a whole other ball game, and you know that it's important that we be able to be a part of that implementation and ensure that it tracks with the purposes for which we're signing. So that was my logic in wanting to do this. And in terms of whether an incomplete portion of a code, I would ask of a section, I would ask counsel. All of these are complete sentences, so it's not like I'm trying to modify the language in any way. And I did provide the citation. I appreciate if you think you say section 9.2 should be 9.2.1.
And in section, whereas section 2.2.11, that comes from the no determination of water rights within the agreement itself, mm-hmm. and that was an extrapolation of a sentence which is in the middle of a pretty detailed paragraph.
Mm-hmm. So again, I would ask counsel if does the notation of the citation of the section itself is that fair to suggest that you know there's more to it, that it's not a complete.
Well, the way that you would phrase it from a grammatical standpoint would be the use of ellipses. Dot, dot, dot.
But wouldn't that be if it's an incomplete sentence?
No. That would be if you're pulling from in the context of a greater whole.
I'd be fine on any of these adding states in part or whatever other grammatical change you think would be most appropriate. I had been assuming, again, we're providing the citation, the section number. And again, this is... To me, this is far more anchored in the text of the agreement than any paraphrasing that currently exists in the resolution that's before us.
Okay.
If I could just follow up with one thing.
And then I want to go to Councilman.
I will acknowledge that there's some good stuff that is in here, and I think that's fine, but there's a frustration with it being presented at the last minute. You know, we had a brief conversation in which you indicated yesterday that you might want to see some changes, but having not seen anything, and nor was there anything for us to review at the beginning of our meeting, people have said that we don't have enough information to make a decision. And so I know that that's also been a concern of yours, that there's been a lot of work that has been done in the background, in the course of the agreements, and trying to understand. And so it's, the last 3 or 4 minutes of this agenda item, and we get handed this, and where I'm concerned, and that's where I'm feeling a little tension here, is that there could be some errors in here. County Council did not have a copy of this prior to the point that you presented it to us. Hank didn't have an opportunity to go through this, nor did Phil. And just in the context, and just in the few minutes we were able to take a look at, obviously we've already discovered that there's one citation that was not appropriate, and then there should have been the use of the ellipses in order to indicate that it's part of a larger section and that it was an extrapolation from. In terms of the language itself, I think it's fine because it is contained within the document, and that is what we're looking at adopting. But that's where my frustration comes from at the moment.
Okay. County Council Chayton, could you cover these particular points and then maybe just a general overview of how this relates to the full document?
Certainly. It is true that I didn't have time to review the entire amendment or changes that Supervisor Lovelace is proposing this morning. I did see some of them earlier this morning, shortly before the board meeting. If the board wants to put these changes into the board resolution, because none of them are actually in full from the sections in the agreements, you can add, for instance, on the first one, whereas section 9.1.9 of the restoration agreement states, you can add in part and then make the quotation. Or as Supervisor Duffy suggests, you can do the three little dots before and after, just to make it clear that it's just part of those sections. in terms of how this, you know, the agreement, if the board adopts the staff recommendations and approves the resolution, whether in the form submitted in the staff report or as amended by Supervisor Lovelace or any other board members suggested changes, really what that is just action by the board showing the intent why you are going to approve the agreements. The therefore resolve part clearly just states the action is you're going to approve the agreements. The agreements is if the board approves and signs on as a party, those are what are going to prevail and will bind the county and all of the parties. So again, the resolution is showing the intent of why the board is taking that action. You know, it's really a policy decision for the board on whether you want to go ahead with Supervisor Lovelace's suggestions on changing and amending the resolution. But yes, I would agree with Supervisor Duffy that it's good to at least say that it is in part. You can use the dots as well to make it even more clear. And yes, whereas the 9.2 section, which is in the third proposed whereas, that should be 9.2.1, and I believe the other sections are correct.
Okay. Thank you. Supervisor Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Madam Counsel, for the refinement. And I do understand Supervisor Lovelace trying to emphasize these points because they're all really related to what we all want to see in the agreements and in the work that we have ahead, particularly the parts about Humboldt County and pursuing their rights. And I see Don Tuttle back here, who has worked a long time with us to try and make that actually happen. So let me make a suggestion that I would amend my motion to include all the staff recommendations without adopting the current resolution and bring that back next week when the language has been incorporated and we can review it and the public has a chance to do that. So that would be the change in the motion in the language. I would offer that.
Here's my quandary.
Okay, thank you. Supervisor Duffy, sorry. Ms. McHugh.
That's okay. I am scheduled to be in Medford at the Klamath Science Conference next week.
Do you know what dress it is?
Well, I would like to be part of the final action. It's been a very long, hard road and a lot of energy, and I'd like to be able to see this, you know, all the way through. I would be willing.
How about the 9th?
We could do it on the 9th. I would also be willing to accept the changes that we've talked about today with the inclusion of these with the necessary grammatical corrections in addition to if we could leave it to council to make the in part determination or the proper citation. And I would also ask that
too complicated.
Sorry. That's just the way my life is. So I can do that if we take it as an action to approve pending staff's revision with this, because there's going to have to be an integration.
It just seems to me, Mr. Chairman.
Supervisor Smith.
Thank you very much. Thank you for your patience.
All good.
Just, it seems to me that this would clear the pathway. Everybody would have a chance to look at the language, including members who were here, and we could move ahead with the primary elements of the agreements today. Just bring the resolution back on the 9th when you'll be here would be a final action. So if that's okay, that would be the motion.
That's certainly fine. I would actually be fine with moving it forward today.
Okay, so that's okay with the motion and the second, and I have Supervisor Neely.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I raised my hand before the amending motion was proposed, but I think the suggestion by Supervisor Smith is an excellent one. I just wanted to comment that I see no problem with adding this language to the resolution. It really clarifies why the board is coming to the conclusions it is, and it's just sort of restating the protections for Humboldt County. And so I think they're excellent suggestions, and I like Supervisor Smith's motion, so I'll be supporting that.
Okay, and I'll call on Supervisor, and there's hand and from Supervisor Robles.
Since I created this little flurry of excitement here, my initial thought had been that I would offer something to come back next week for final action, except I had been aware that Supervisor Duffy would not be here. But I am fine with either of the courses of action, and sounds like the one that we have before us now is, just to make sure I'm clear on it, to approve pending the incorporation of this language into the final resolution, which would come back to us on the 9th.
On the resolution, the other recommendations would be adopted via the motion.
Okay, so we have a adjusted motion and a second. Do we have any? Thank you, Richard. County Council Chaitin.
I just wanted to make clear on the motion on the floor, then the entire, the board is incorporating with the motion all of the changes suggested by Supervisor Lovelace this morning, all of the whereases, all of the paragraphs.
Along with the necessary grammatical
corrections. Okay.
To come back for final approval on the 9th. The resolution, that's the only.
Supervisor Duffy.
This is one I want to make really clear, because I think that there's too many finals and too many approvals that we're talking about. So for clarification purposes, is the intent of the motion to approve the KBRA and the KHSA at this meeting? And then we will have a resolution that'll follow on February 9th. Okay.
Including the language of Supervisor Lovelace.
Absolutely.
With edits.
Yeah. Thank you.
So if I could just clarify.
Yes.
In terms of the board recommendation item number 4, where it's designating Supervisor Duffy to sign and execute the agreements specified in the resolution. We're not adopting that. The board's not adopting that today. So I would just simply ask that recommendation number 4 be modified to state, designate Supervisor Duffy to sign and execute the Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement and the Klamath Hydroelectric Settlement Agreement, and leave out the reference to the resolution, since it's not being adopted, and keep in on behalf of the board, and then we'll come back and just, the only action the board will really need to take then is adopting the resolution as submitted today with the grammatical changes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you for keeping us on track here. Yes. So, yes, I was going to call for a public comment on the adjustments here.
The only thing we'd like to reserve comment, John Corbett, 1801 Ocean
yes.
Drive, York Tribe. We'd like to reserve the ability to make comment on 2.2.11. History is it took the Yurok Tribe about a week to negotiate this provision. We may just sign off because it's a whereas, and if you sign the agreement, of course, will be speaks for itself. But we do want some care taken. To look at a very intricate paragraph that, like I said, took us a week. We may be able to live with it as written, we may not.
Okay, thank you. And do we have anyone else from the public who would like to weigh in here? Okay, seeing none. Deputy Turner, do you have we confused you completely? Okay, no. You're good. Okay, thank you. So we have a motion and a second. All in support?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Okay. Thank you all very much.
Nice job.
Okay. Now we'll give a minute for people to pack up. Thanks very much to Mr. Seaman for a great presentation again. And now we'll take up the polled item.
That was B, right?
It was B1, yes.
Good morning, Supervisor.
Welcome, Tad.
I'm Tad. Peace be with you. My problem, I could have segued right out of Jill Geist's little speech right into this. And my problem is this is not an emergency situation that needs to be added to the agenda after the agenda is made. We're talking about a rental agreement change. Now, if nobody saw this coming, well, then give us a week to think about it. But if they did see it coming, then it's definitely the fault of the Health and Human Services Department that they didn't put this on the agenda in time. And, you know, I mean, I talked 30 seconds over the three-minute limit. You have six cops come and drag me out because I violated a rule. Yet we have rules in the law that are there for a reason. And these rules are to give the public time to think and to do this. And now, lately, we have been getting a whole bunch of B1, 2, 3, B items that are being added to the agenda. And I think we need to stop this practice. We need to start having these things in the agenda on time or put them off till the next week. I don't have anything against this item in particular. In fact, I'm supportive of the WIC program, and I think it's great that they're going to open up the church for another day. But I don't see why this is all of a sudden a rush emergency situation that we have to throw on the agenda at the last minute after people had already started perusing and researching and checking out the agenda. So I'm saying let's play by the rules. If one person has to play by the rules, then I think everybody should have to play by the rules. And you need to send this item back and say, hey, bring it back. Put it on next week's agenda like you're supposed to do. Thank you. Okay. Peace be with you.
Point taken. Thank you, Tad.
Question?
Yes. Supervisor Duffy.
I would ask Mr. Smith-Haynes or the clerk of the board, at the time that the agenda was published, was it available with the agenda as a whole as well as listed with the other agenda items on Friday?
Nikki, do you want to address that? I believe so, yes.
Yes, it was. Anytime a supplemental such as this, it's always on the agenda and provided full packet at the time I publish and post the agenda, as long as it's under that heading. Okay. It just meant it came after the deadline, I guess.
Basically, what had happened here, this is probably my fault. I had asked the department for an additional clarification on the financial impact section of the report because we had been trying to address public concern about the financial impact section of agenda items not being clear. So the department had done that for me and returned it to me. It just did not make it to the clerk of the board before she had finished the rest of the agenda, but she was able to put it on as a supplemental, and it was published on Friday with the rest of the agenda. So,
okay. Thank you for those clarifications. Supervisor Lovelace.
And just by way of additional clarification, I think we're looking at two different things here. We're looking at something that's an internal process that's late getting onto the agenda for our internal purposes, but still is published with the agenda at the same time everything else is published for public review. Was not late in that regard. And that's something altogether different than an item that does not appear on the agenda at all and is brought to us here in the chamber as an urgent item, in which case we have to vote whether or not to include it prior to being able to hear the item. In this case, it was published with the agenda and presented to the, there's no difference, no distinction as far as the public's ability to have access to the information.
County Council Chaitin.
Yeah, not to belabor the point, but that's I was going to clarify that as well, that this is on the agenda. It's just not in the normal course of where it would fall if it came in the internal timelines of the county, and that is different than something that is literally not physically on the agenda, but the need arose after the posting of the agenda for the board to, the need arose and there's need to take immediate action. And that's when the board will vote to actually add something to the agenda. So just another little clarification.
Okay. Thank you. And CAO Smith-Haynes.
Mr. Chair, I will say, though, that the comment from the public is well taken. I mean, I completely agree with Tad's point that we should try to avoid supplemental items as much as possible. So we'll try and do a better job of that in the future.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Supervisor Lovelace.
And with all of that, I'd approve the or move to approve the item.
Okay. Thank you. So we have a motion and a second. Any other public comment on this item? Okay. All in support?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Thank you. Motion passes. And that leads us, I believe, if any logic is prevailing here, to board member reports.
Mr. Chairman, before we go to board member reports.
Yes.
I would like to bring up and acknowledge that Humboldt County did win an award last night presented by the ACLU to the critical incident team. And Phil Crandall was there to receive that award. And there were several nominees. And it's for the great job they did in response to several incidents in the Eureka area that involved law enforcement. And so I want to congratulate the department and the team for doing an outstanding job, and to thank the ACLU for acknowledging this work in our community.
Okay. Thank you for bringing that forward, Supervisor Neely. Phil, would you have any comments? We'd love to hear from you.
Mr. Chairman, will Director Crandall sitting down, one of the last incidents was in my very neighborhood, a couple houses away, and all the personnel that were there, the folks that I talked to, really acknowledged the help that they got from Department of Health and Human Services. And the delegate did an absolutely tremendous job. So I wanted to pass along my thanks in public for an excellent representation from Health and Human Services.
Thank you very much, Supervisor Smith, for that comment. That was relayed to the member of the team, and I appreciate your comments as well. Supervisor Neely, this has been it's bittersweet for the department. Obviously, we had a lot of community healing to engage in over the years, and luckily we were able to bridge those differences and come together with law enforcement and NAMI, National Alliance for the Mentally Ill, and our Mental Health Board to look at new solutions and new partnerships that were involved in a systemic change in how we approached the mentally ill in crisis. So it's a real work in progress. It was brought to Humboldt County through the Mental Health Services Act, which is currently under siege under the state budget. So we'll be cautious to remind the board that even good programs face elimination under the state budget. So again, we appreciate the work. We appreciate the changes, the systemic changes that we've been able to bring about through CIT in Humboldt County. And again, a side impact of this is really to destigmatize mental illness through education and training of community stakeholders, including law enforcement. So it's a good step in the right direction and a good healing for the community. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Supervisor Neely.
Just to comment that I believe, Phil, you can correct me if I'm wrong with the numbers, but I think over 130 law enforcement officers countywide have participated in the training.
We've actually trained 160 law enforcement officers and 50 additional first responders to the model. So
and that training is not just an hour somewhere. It's
several
substantial
days. And that was part of the process. Initially, there was a lot of reluctance and from law enforcement to dedicate that amount of time. It's an expensive endeavor, and it causes a lot of administrative requirements in terms of overtime and backfilling. But it's been heavily embraced by law enforcement. We did do some specific acknowledgement to Eureka PD and Lynn's work, Lieutenant Sotomayor, I believe it is,
yeah.
Who's now at Humboldt State, and Chief Nielsen as well at Eureka PD, who has really been a strong supporter of CIT and changing the culture there to a more joint response.
I think the leadership from our department here and the leadership with Gard Nielsen at Eureka Police Department, it really has made a difference.
It certainly has, and NAMI and Mental Health Board are thrilled as well. So thank you very much.
Okay, thanks. Oh, Supervisor Lovelace.
And I just wanted to note that until a moment ago, we actually had three of the nominees for this award in this room, which included Supervisor Neely, who was nominated for her leadership on the Law Enforcement Liaison Committee.
She's still in the room.
Yeah, she is still. But the third member was was Tad Robinson, who just left. And the other two, I believe, were Larry Glass, Eureka City Council member, for his work on a true ward system, and Betty Chin for her work on helping the homeless in Eureka. So congratulations on the award, and congratulations to all the nominees.
Thanks. I did omit my last comments to the board. We did also acknowledge the support of the board in giving us their backing all the time in terms of trying to do transformative changes, trying to change the form and function. And specifically, I talked about the support of the mental health liaisons of the board. Initially, Supervisor John Woolley and his support during the crisis, and then Supervisor Neely also continuing to support our efforts despite the challenges in front of us. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Phil. Okay, so now we will migrate into board member reports. Supervisor Lovelace.
Okay. Boy, this was a busy week, and not just a lot of meetings, but a lot of really significant things that trying not to ramble for too long here, I really had to condense down because there were a number of things that I really wanted to be able to talk about, but I'll focus on a few of them. Friday we had the two that I think are most significant. And Friday we had our medical marijuana subcommittee meeting. And this, of course, followed just right on the heels of the People versus Kelly decision, which got a lot of attention last week and will continue to get a lot of attention. That decision invalidates that was a California Supreme Court decision, I should note, that invalidates the numerical limits in the state's guidelines by confirming that Proposition 215 as a voter initiative could not be modified or limited by the legislature. However, previous decisions had already invalidated the numerical limits from other approaches, basically the argument that you can't legislate medical opinion. And this was kind of, in a way, a final action that simply confirmed a lot of what we already knew in terms of what we can and cannot act upon. So it really doesn't dramatically change the direction that we've been pursuing. While I know counsel is still reviewing, I know the Attorney General's office is still reviewing this decision, but preliminarily at least, some of the talk that's been out there about that this makes it completely, completely removes any ability for jurisdictions to regulate, period. The initial take on it is that some of that language seems to go a bit far. So I think that we're still going to continue to pursue the course that we've been on. We're still working at bringing this forward to the board, I believe on the 9th is the date that we have for a report. This decision, really, it informs our efforts and reaffirms the direction that we've already been taking. So, also, following upon that decision, I'd reported previously that CSAC, the California State Association of Counties, had, somewhat at my urging, had formed a medical marijuana working group among the counties to look at how to address these issues in a more uniform fashion. And on Friday, got an email from CSAC noting that they've now got are trying to put together a first meeting. They've finished populating this working group with supervisors, CAOs, county councils, and others from counties around the state. And I was requested to co-chair this working group along with Supervisor Susan Adams of Marin County, which I will be doing. And our first meeting will be We're working on nailing it down, but it looks like it'll be February 18th. And we're putting together a very busy agenda for that meeting. So that's something that I'll be continuing to work on and to be reporting back to the board on that. And the other thing that I wanted to mention also regards CSAC, and that's that tomorrow I'll be taking part in a conference call for CSAC's Ag and Natural Resources Policy Committee. And one of the primary issues that's going to be on that discussed on that call is to consider a position of opposition to a ballot initiative that, in my mind, is very cynically titled the California Taxpayers' Right to Vote Act. This would amend the state constitution to require a two-thirds vote to establish a community choice aggregation program for a public energy utility. And despite that title, ultimately this is an act which will deny communities the right to self-determination and self-reliance on energy issues. PG&E is the sole sponsor of this initiative and has pumped $6.5 million into it, which is, to me, very frustrating because we have a very good relationship with PG&E up here on the efforts in which we're involved. And so this is a reminder that despite that good relationship, this is still a company that is statewide and whose goals may not be the same as those that we have here locally. CSAC staff is recommending a position of opposition to this. This is just a straw vote at the committee level, and we'll come back to CSAC's full board of directors, and I'm anticipating having a presentation, an item to our board prior to a final vote by CSAC's board. And I'll conclude at that.
Okay, thank you. Supervisor Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I did meet with PG&E last night, although we didn't talk about the ballot initiative. And as Supervisor Lovelace alluded to, we do have a good relationship here, and I was able to convey our thanks for their quick responses during the recent storms and prior to that with the earthquake. And they'll be coming. I know they spoke with Supervisor Neely, too. They'll be coming before us next week with a presentation on the status of the new power generation facility and what we can expect to see in the future with the decommissioning of the nuclear portion of the plant and what the footprint's going to look like. So it'll be a great presentation. Tomorrow night, I'll be traveling to Southern Humboldt with Supervisor Clendenin. We've long worked with Verizon to try and come up with a better, more modern communication upgrade for telephone systems in Southern Humboldt, and they have agreed to do that. And tomorrow night will be their duly noted reporting period end, and we'll have a status of the equipment that they've installed to resolve some of the communication problems in Southern Humboldt. Friday, I will be in Del Norte County for the Klamath Management Zone Coalition meeting, which will there will be discussions about the upcoming salmon possibilities, but also more related to the Oregon Coastal Marine Protected Network, which is taking place up there at the same time. The Marine Life Protection Act is being implemented in Northern California. And wanted to mention that tonight is the Elections Committee meeting, which will be up in the Elections Offices conference room at 6:30. And I wanted to compliment my my colleague from the 3rd District on his effort to make this medical marijuana issue one bigger than just countywide significance in how we're going to address the problems that we have. It is bigger. It's statewide, and we've said that on a number of occasions. And these efforts that you've taken forward, Mark, with related to CSAC subcommittees, rural counties, is remarkable in a sense that you've jumped forward. This was not one that was to be taken on by the counties with any aggressive notion, I don't think, until you really moved it ahead. So you're doing a splendid job with this, and I wanted to compliment you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thank you. Supervisor Neely.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Last week I attended the LAFCO meeting for the board and also the Mental Health Advisory Board meeting. That group is actually looking at and exploring consolidating the Drug and Alcohol Advisory Committee with the Mental Health Board Advisory Committee, and there's some work to do there, but those that were in attendance from both boards spoke very much in support of the consolidation. I also met last week with representatives of the Board of Easter Seals and their staff to discuss upgrades that they're doing at the pool there at the facility. And I had a meeting this week with PG&E to get updates on the status and to talk about potential amendments they'll need before the Coastal Commission in the future, and also to talk about brownfield issues with representatives of the Harbor District and community members on brownfield cleanup.
Okay. Thank you. Supervisor Duffy.
Thank you, Chairman Clendenin. We had a meeting of the Air Quality Control District last week, and subsequent to that, the bulk of my time has really been consumed by all things Klamath. There have been also some meetings with Northern Union High School District in McKinleyville, as well as McKinleyville Community Services District staff, and there have been a variety of constituent issues, primarily around the issues of the planning. I'm looking forward this week to being able to get a bit more re-engaged with Redwood Creek issues as it pertains to the levee and some estuary restoration possibilities. We'll be meeting with some folks Thursday on that. And the next week I will be at the Klamath Science Conference, which is going to be in Medford. It's 3 days, followed by February 8th. I've been asked to attend the Klamath County Commission as they are considering the Klamath agreements also. So they've asked that as many of the party participants be available for a panel discussions as they work through their decision-making process. So that has been Klamath, Oregon, their commissioners, of course, are three. It's not a body of five, it's a body of three. So when you're talking about the ability to interact with other board members, obviously when you're dealing with the Sunshine Act, you're further constrained. You can't even talk to one board member. So Commissioner Elliott has been the one carrying the water on this one, and he's done a phenomenal job. And we really want to make sure that we're able to support him in terms of being able to provide whatever information that we can all provide from our various perspectives. So with that concludes. I'll be getting back here as quickly as I can for the 9th.
Thank you. And for myself, along with Supervisor Neely, attended LAFCO, and one of the significant issues they were looking at was the spheres of influence around Blue Lake, City of Blue Lake, and the City of Arcata, and how best to protect ag land. That night, Wednesday night, attended the Fortuna Chamber of Commerce mixer that was co-hosted by Lowe's Furniture and Sequoia Gas, and just a great, enthusiastic group. When the economy's up or down, Fortuna's business community really, really rallies. Let's see. Saturday night, I attended the Buckeye business meeting, and really appreciate how engaged they stay in issues both statewide and local. And then followed by that night by the Riotel Volunteer Fire Department annual banquet dinner. And again, another community that knows how to work together. So thank you. So that concludes our board reports. If I'm not mistaken, our next item, CAO Smith Haynes, is the federal and state budget update.
Yes, thank you, Chair Clendenin. I usually talk about the state budget, and I will do that, but I actually have a bit of information about the federal budget, which we don't often get. President Obama's State of the Union address will be tomorrow night, and he is scheduled to release his budget next week, early next week, probably on Monday. So we will be following that. As for the state budget, things continue to not churn along, I guess, is the message coming out of Sacramento. Folks have seen in the news the releases of prisoners that have started to occur. Another news bit that happened last week is that the Republican caucus in the assembly has a new minority leader who is a very strong anti-tax person. So those kinds of things have contributed to, I think, some of the lack of action. The state controller released a report at the end of last week saying that there will be a cash crisis in April if the legislature takes no action. And I spoke with our advocates from Peterson Consulting yesterday afternoon. They related to me that they had had a conversation with the chair of one of the assembly budget subcommittees this week, past week, and said, you know, what activity do you expect during this special session? Again, the governor called the legislature into special session to deal with the budget. And, you know, do you think you'll take up the whole budget during the special session like you did last year? Will you just deal with a part of the budget? And the chair of the committee had absolutely no idea, had received no direction from leadership in the assembly. So, again, I think things continue to not churn along in Sacramento. And that has real consequences back here in Humboldt County when we're in that kind of a position. Health and Human Services Director Crandall sent to your board a synopsis yesterday of a few of the impacts that the governor's budget would have, and I won't go through all of them, but I did want to just highlight a few for members of the public who might be listening in. You know, one of the governor's proposals is a reduction in the grants under the California Work Opportunities Program, CalWORKs, and that equates to an annual loss to the Humboldt County economy of $2.35 million. Another proposal is reductions in Medi-Cal, which would cause us to lose the ARA positions that the board just approved last fall. And that would be a $3.1 million loss to the local economy. In the area of the in-home supportive services program, the governor's current proposal is elimination of services for folks with a functional index score below 4. That is 93% of local participants losing services, 1,912 local care providers out of work, and $12.2 million in lost wages over the course of a year. And if the trigger cuts were to come to fruition, which again, as a reminder, those are the cuts that the governor has proposed in the event that the federal government does not dump $7 billion on Sacramento, that would raise that figure just for the IHSS program to $15.8 million in lost wages right here in Humboldt County. So you can see there are very serious impacts to the proposals that are floating around in Sacramento, and not much action on them to report. So.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for that report, and that's sort of, those are some daunting numbers. And I would ask that you keep us apprised with Peterson Consulting of people in the public are going to want to know, well, what can we do here? We really don't want to stay in this mire forever. So in the ballot propositions that are coming up in the fall, if we could use this forum perhaps to help educate people and think of what we really could do. Because I think when you're that short on a budget, there's got to be some pain, but I think that pain wants to be accompanied by some real action to move forward. So we're not kicking this can down the road forever, and I would hope that our CSAC and CSAC representative could keep us apprised as well of any good suggestions that come from that organization to make some structural change, because I really don't want to do this forever, personally. Supervisor Duffy.
Just a quick question. You brought up the ARA and the fact that the board did approve this late summer, early fall. What is the status of that, and do we have folks that are actively being able to take advantage of the program, the employers, and do we have people on the ground and working now?
Yes, we do. As a matter of fact, we have an employee in the county administrative office who is being funded through that program. The board approved 148 positions for county to take advantage of that, and I'm not sure of the exact number that are filled. I know it's at least 30 of those positions that are filled. Maybe Director Crandall can update that number somewhat.
And then we also have the private employer portion. That one hasn't been approved yet.
I did also want to speak to the chair's comment and let you know that I will be going down to Sacramento on Friday for a meeting with the CAO's group, and of course budget will be the majority of what we're talking about at that time, and then I'm also planning to meet again with Peterson Consulting on Friday afternoon, so we'll try and keep the board apprised of those. So with I'll ask Director Crandall to make a few comments.
In regard to the federal stimulus funds on the subsidized employment, that's part of the package that both the governor and the ledge analyst office feel is likely to get an extension beyond the sunset date in September. So we're still hopeful that while the $6.9 billion is very unlikely and unrealistic as a bailout, the extension of ARA and our existing extension of FMAP associated with ARA, the percentage rate in California, will be extended. So that's positive news. The other piece of it is the trigger cuts can't be implemented solely by the governor, so we have a lot more negotiations going on what types of triggers would be involved. Hopefully not those draconian cuts that disproportionately hurt the elderly and the poor in Humboldt County. So we'll stay tuned on that. In terms of our public model, we have about a third of about 50-plus positions in the hired or pending hire stage. So we're about a third there. And on the private contract, we're continuing to negotiate and look at rate issues and costs of the vendors that are being selected. And we're looking at what other role the job market can play in an enhanced response. So we're still not quite done there, but hopefully we'll have more time under the extension to implement.
Thank you. Any further comments? Okay. Any board member comments here further? All right. And I believe that covers our business of the day, does it not? County Council Chayton, do we have a need for closed session?
We do. Thank you, Chair Clendenin. We have item I-1 to confer with counsel regarding anticipated litigation, initiation of litigation pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9C as one potential case.
Okay. Great. So we will adjourn now for closed session, and then we'll be back here for public comment at 1:30.